Dear brothers and sisters, masters have been coming from time to time to guide the child humanity back to their homes. We were sometime in the lap of God in our true home ever since we are separated from there. We have forgotten our home altogether. So masters come to tell us that there is a God who has made all this creation, who is immanent in every form and controlling all creation. We are his children. We are of the same essence as that of God. We should love him. As he is immanent in every form, he resides in every heart, we should love them too. If we love God, naturally when he resides in every heart, we should love everybody. So whenever they come, they bring the origin of love. All masters who came from time to time, they gave out the same thing in their own language, of course. Kabir says, love God, who is the controller of all. Tenth Guru says, addressing to all communities of the world, hear ye all. I tell you the truth, God is love. We are of the same essence as that of God. Love is innate in our souls, and the way back to God is also through love. So they bring the religion of love. That is what Bible also says. Love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength. And the second commandment is love thy neighbor as thyself. All Persian philosophers everywhere, you'll find the same truth. All scriptures which are with us, they have the sayings of those masters who came to the world and place before us all that we should love God, and as God has created all creation, man, animals, birds, reptiles, they are the lower members of the family of God. But we say that we have not seen him, how can we know now? So, along with this, tell us that you got the man body. God made man with equal privilege from God. Born the same way, outer construction the same, two hands, 2 feet, 2 eyes, 2 ears, inner construction also the same. Man has got lungs, stomach, everyday morning, municipality takes out filth from the body. But you are not the body, you have the body. You are conscious entities as of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness, and you are conscious entities. You are living this man body. Body works so long as you are in the body. And wonderful it is. This man body which you are carrying has so many apertures of 2 eyes, 2 ears, two nostrils, mouth, and two underneath. With all that, we cannot run away out of it. So we are controlled in the body by some power which is called God into expression power. That power controls all universe also. That is called by different things, by different name. Nama it is called. World it is called. Shabd it is called. So Kalma it is called. So God absolute cannot be seen. Nobody has seen God at any time, the absolute God. But the God which when came into expression, he was one and wished to be many. That power which came into expression, that is called God into expression. Power called by different saints, by different names. That is the power that controlling the whole universe, also controlling us in the body. So our body works so long as we are in the body, and we are in the body so long that power controls us in the body. When that power is withdrawn, we have to leave the body. Man's body is considered to be the highest in all creation. It is considered next to God. Mohammedan scriptures tell us when God made man's body and chose his life into it, he ordered the angels to bow down to the man's body. Taittiriya Upanishad that also says the same thing, that the rishis, the souls of the rishis, after enjoying the higher bliss of different planes, when they returned, they selected the man body to enter. So man body is a golden opportunity in which we can know God and no other body. So that is why all scriptures tell so very highly about man body, and we are fortunate we have got the man body. This man body is given to us as a golden opportunity, but it is not to last long. It is not our home. As also the whole world in which we are here, that is not our own home. Man's body is made up of matter, and matter is changing every moment of life. The world around us also is made of matter and changing at the same speed at which our body is changing. But we are conscious entities, souls, under the control of mind. Mind is under the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are dragged like anything by the outer enjoyment. So we have identified with the outgoing faculties, body and outside world, so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. We are, as it were, under a grand delusion. The delusion comes up only because we have forgotten ourselves. It is we who live in the body. And so long we are in the body in which we can know God, but it is soul that has to know God. God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, nor mind, nor intellect. With the intellect we try to understand what is what. So all masters who came in the past tell us, man know thyself. Old Greek philosophers said the same thing in their own language, of course, Gnothi Seoton. Old Latin had the same to say, in their own language, of course, Nazi Tibson. Persian philosophers also say the same thing. The ultimate end of all knowledge is to know God and to know yourself. If we have known so much all about other things and not known about our own self, then they give a very, then you are ignorant. So we have got a man body. Fortunately, in this man body alone we can know God. Those who solve the mystery of life, masters, they say, well, look, you are a man, you are a conscious entity. You are of the same essence as that of God. You are in mind, in body. Your mind is the matter. The body, of course, is a very golden opportunity which you got it, but you are identified with it so much so that you have forgotten also. To bring home this thing, we can understand from a fact. The boat is rowing down the stream and got 4, 5, 6 people rowing in the boat. The speed of the boat is the same as that of the river. And those who are identified with the boat also rowing down at the same speed that the boat is rowing. The man outside on the calls out, dear friends, you are rowing down the stream. Those who are in the boat, they look to the water around them and the boat, they say, well, we are standing, we are stationing. Who says we are going? Why this delusion? Because we are identified with the boat which is going at the same speed as of the water. So when two things are changing at the same speed, they appear to be stationary. This is a grand delusion in which all of us, both learned and the unlearned, both are undergoing. To know ourselves, then we will have to know how to know ourselves. We do generally know at the level of feelings or drawing inferences. They are both subject to error. Seeing is above all. I say, for instance, this is my spectacle, I have put it down. This is my watch, I have put it down. This is my handkerchief. I say, it is my body. It is my outgoing faculty. It is my intellect or mind. Can we put it off? So knowing oneself is a matter of pure self-analysis. Rising above body consciousness, then you know you are the one who has enlivening the whole body, just a bulb in the room, enlivens the whole room, seeing that your bulb of the soul is at the back of the eyes. From there you enliven the whole man body. And you are controlled in the body. And man body alone you can know that controlling power called God into expression power. Both you and whom you have to meet, both reside in the man body. So man body is the true temple of God. Pity it is that the one who has to know him is talking about outside. So there are 10 doors in the body, 9 are apparent, 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 2 ears, mouth, 2 underneath, and 10th is latent. That is at the back of the eyes, from where the soul is withdrawn and transcends into the beyond to the portal of death, what you call. So knowing oneself practically, you can have a defeat of some adept in this spiritual way. He will give you a demonstration how to rise above body consciousness. Nine doors lead to the sense world, and the tenth door from the physical body into the beyond. That is why all masters said, look here, know thyself. But knowing oneself practically is a matter of pure self-analysis, as I submitted. Can we hide at the feet of somebody who does rise above body consciousness from day to day at his will and pleasure? So long we are in the body, it is something like that. A parable goes, a man was praying God, thanking him. People asked him, why are you thanking God? He said, last night, thief came here and took away my heart. Then they asked him, what is there matter for thanking, because you lost the heart. He says, I am thanking God that I was not riding on the heart, otherwise I would also be stolen away. It's a matter of smiling, of course. But he was very wise. He saved the rider and let the horse go. And what we have done? We had the horse, we are riding, and the rider is forgotten. So man know oneself is to mean to know by practical self-analysis, by rising above body consciousness. When he knows that, then he sees some power is controlling the body. So Master tells us, there is a God. We can also see him, the God in creation power, of course, when we rise above body consciousness, when we rise into the tenth door, when we rise above the life of senses. A great atheist was at the deathbed. He had in his room a motto written, God is nowhere. A child came up, he was reading G.O.D. God, I.S.S., N.O.W. now, H.E.R.E. here. God is now here. And the deathbed man atheist said, yes. Child, I see, there's some power, all right. So we can know, Master do tell us, there is a God, as I don't know. They bear testimony to it. And they say, you can also have a contact with him when your inner eye opens. Or at the time of death, when you withdraw from all outside, leave the nine doors of the body, and return to the back of the eyes, when your eyes are upturned, then you see that some higher power is controlling us. So he is the life of our own very life. They come to tell us there is a God whom we should love. We are his children, and at the same time we are all brothers and sisters in God. Our souls are of the same essence as that of God. As such, all brothers and sisters. So as man, I told you, we are all one with the same privilege from God, no high, no low. As soul being of the same essence as that of God, we are his children. We are all brothers and sisters in God. And they tell us, love God. God resides in every heart, so whom we worship is also the same called by so many names. So unity already exists as man, as soul, whom we worship. The unity already exists, we have forgotten. Master come and they give us a demonstration of that. That there is a God. They ask me, have you seen God? They say, yes. Guru Nanak was asked, is there a God? He says, yes, he's appearing everywhere. Christ said, behold the Lord. Similar, Kabir says, my all delusion is gone when I rose above body consciousness and had a glimpse of God into expression power. They bear testimony that we have seen God where? In this very man body. Why do we not see? Because it says mind stands between you and God. Our soul is under the control of mind. Mind is in the control of outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties are engaged or absorbed into the enjoyments outside. Enjoyments outside drag like anything all the outgoing faculties. So we are under the grand delusion. Now to know God, unless we know ourselves by rising above body consciousness, or a return to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. So Master tell us, learn to die so that you may begin to live. Saint Plutarch tells us, those who are initiated into the mysteries of the beyond, their soul has the same experience of leaving the body as it has at the time of death. This is a matter of pure self-analysis. Knowing oneself by rising above body consciousness, and when we know ourselves, we see that controlling power is over it. We are mere puppets in his hands. So masters come to remind. Scientists do tell us this body and the outer world is changing as a result of matter, etc. There is no other power which controls it. Ultimately, they came to the decision, this is all well planned. There is some power which is controlling it, and that is a conscious power. Everything goes at stated hours. Sunrise at stated hours. All systems, seasons come and go according to the system. So this is the first thing that the masters tell us, that there is a God. Those we can see, they say we can see. Only divinity if we rise above body consciousness. And now we are identified with it, so much that we have forgotten. So masters, what do they say? They say, please, this man body is a place where you can manifest God. All of the masters also say, it is a place where God lives. Al-Quran or the Muhammad literature tells us that God says, I am the hidden treasure within you, why don't you have it? Guru Nanak also says the treasure of divinity is within you. You can dig it up, delve into it and dig it up if you but listen to the word of the Master. Those who see, they can also give it the demonstrations others to see. How? By rising above body consciousness. What do they tell us? Oh soul, this body and this world is not your home. Your conscious entity, your true home is the true home of your father, who is all conscious. God does send masters from time to time to bring us back home. This world is, all are unhappy. So they say, well, look here, look to yourself, you are a conscious entity, the opposition of consciousness. This man body is a golden opportunity which has been afforded to you. to know yourself and know the over God, all which is containing you in the body. So your true home is not physical body. Your consciousness, your true home is the true home of the Father, which is of our consciousness. Now, if this is the mystery that has to be solved while in the man body, so all masters tell us we should rise above it. So there are different ways of telling. Amongst the Hindus, they say you must be twice born. One birth in this body and the second birth into the beyond. In the old days, 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old children were made twice born and were given Gayatri Mantra. Nowadays also that custom prevails amongst the Hindus. Children are made twice born and they are given the same Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri Mantra, what does it say? Rise above body consciousness. Just accept the rays of the sun coming to you and be one with the sun within you. O God, direct our souls to you. This is the Gayatri Mantra. So in the old days, 5 years, 7 years, 9 years old children were made twice born and given this mantra. All the same, at the same time, they were given demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness and see the light of God. When he wanted absolute one to be many, when he came into being, there was vibration. Vibration results in two things, light and sound. God is light and God is nada, music of the spheres. God is Noor, Muhammad says, God is Noor, Kalam-e Kadeem. Similar, all other masters say, as Jyoti Maharaj and Shruti Maharaj. So first thing, you can know yourself only when you rise above body consciousness. You'll see that your enlightening this body. Take the example of a factory run by powerhouse. The staffs of the powerhouse are connected with the different departments of the factory. Whichever department you want to close, you take out the step, that particular step from that department. If you want to close the whole family, then the main step is taken out. So factory of the man body is run by us. See? Now there are departments working in the man factory. There are department of the sight, seeing. The department of the hearing, the department of the outgoing faculty called taste. So there's the department of the nose, smell, and other contact, attachment. So five departments are working under the control of the man body, in the man body run by us. You know the outer expression of soul, what it is? It is called attention. And you must have experienced such like things in your life. When you're sitting absorbed in some thought, somebody calls you once, twice, thrice, you do not hear. He comes up to you and tells us, look here, I've called you so many times, why don't you hear? He says, my thought was absorbed. My attention was not with the ears. I think you must have experienced like that many times. Sometimes you are absorbed in thought to take your food, you don't think if it's sweet or what. When you want to have an injection, what do? You just divert your attention at one place, all right, now inject. Pain is felt but less. so this outgoing faculties get strength from us. But the whole thing is topsy-turvy now. Mind, intellect, outgoing faculties take strength from us and able to enjoy outside. But the fact remains that outward enjoyments drag our outgoing faculty like anything, and outgoing faculty are dragging the mind. Mind is dragging the soul. The whole thing is topsy-turvy. Masters come. They teach us how to control the five outgoing faculties. They give you a boost, a demonstration of self-analysis, how to rise above the outgoing faculties to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. I told you just now that Saint Plutarch tells us that those who are initiated into the seat of the beyond, they have the same experience of leaving the body as it has at the time of death. So these outgoing faculties, enjoyments, are had by the outgoing faculties, and outgoing faculties anywhere up to here. Eyes, ears, nose, mouth, everything.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning, our reader is Helen von Aldenbrook. Are you there, Helen?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. This morning, I'm going to read from Master's book, Baba Jamal Singh. The perfection of outer conduct was essential, as it was only an indispensable means for reaching the inner goal. Love and faith for the Satguru, self-surrender, and the ethically unimpeachable life all converge on this center. Man's ultimate goal is at one-ment with the Absolute, and if this is not achieved, the rest was not of much benefit. It was this question of actual spiritual ascension that was Babaji's main concern as a teacher. He did not expend much time on matters of theory. Why dispute, he would say. Turn within. Go inside and see for yourself. His correspondence with Baba Sawan Singh Ji is one long exhortation to leave the outside world and to retreat to the world within. And each of his letters has something valuable to say on the actual practice of spirituality. Since the soul had fallen a victim to Maya through the mind and the senses, the way to liberation for it lay through its withdrawal from them. The two sadhanas that Babaji gave for practice, as his predecessors had done, were Simran and Bhajan. The first, involving repetition of the sacred names of the Lord, is to be preached at all hours of the day, practice of all hours of the day. Always keep Simran in mind, he enjoined. Even while moving or busy at work, constant thought of the Supreme One is the greatest security against worldly thoughts and desires. It helps the mind in keeping itself free from its usual preoccupations, and when done with full attention at the time of meditation, it enables a speedy collection of the currents of consciousness at the spiritual center between and behind the eyebrows. Once such concentration, or dhyan, has been attained, one can get in touch with the sound current, and dhyan, resulting from Simran, led naturally to bhajan, or absorption, into the shabdun. When you are doing your bhajan or Simran, do not have any worldly cares in your mind, nor let yourself be distracted by any thoughts. First, do your Simran for a quarter of an hour. Then gradually fix your attention in the music of the Shabdun. Then give up, Simran, and anchor your mind and soul in the Shabd. You will then experience great bliss, and supreme grace will descend on you from the highest region. Such was the general pattern. The details, of course, are adjustable. The time factor could vary, but daily meditation to be maintained at all costs. Listen to the Shabdun calling in your heart every day with great love and devotion for 15 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes or an hour or two, according to the time at your disposal. But you must listen to it every day. There was great beauty in the Shabd. It has a music that is beyond any music created by man and which drew the soul toward itself. It forever calling is calling the spirit toward its divine home. And though it was not heard by ordinary men, yet those who had developed through meditation and the grace of a Satguru the capacity of inner hearing could hear its melody every minute of the day, now growing stronger as the mind focused itself at one point, now dimming and fading away as one's thoughts scattered in various directions and the attention is dissipated. It is Shabd that's the true anchor of the seeker. It is the conscious power that has brought everything into creation. And it's also one's real master, the Shabd Guru, for the Satguru in his human form was its manifestation. Babaji once said, Shabdun, that is our real form. This physical body is only a garment. Nobody could keep it forever. And nobody ever will. Believe, O devout ones, that the Shabd form of the Satguru, which has no beginning and no end, is within the body. Once one has developed a constant link with this inner music, it works as a shield against worldly afflictions and sorrows. Misfortunes visited everyone, and one's past karmas had to be paid for. But for the man who has rooted himself in the Shabdun, they had lost their sting. Babaji, speaking mostly to simple villagers, drove home his teachings through examples and similes based on village life, thus explaining the protective power of Shabd. He would say, the body is like a village or city, and the Shabdun is our own house. When somebody dies or there is some great suffering in another house, everyone in that house is very unhappy, but we in our own house are quite contented. Again, clarifying the magnetic power and hold of the inner music. On another occasion, he wrote, the Shabdun will pull it, the mind, and keep it in the same way as animals, like goats or cattle that are kept tied by means of a rope. The greatest obstacle to the seeker is the mind and the senses. It is through their agency that the soul has been caught in the nets of Maya, and the soul has to engage itself, disengage itself from them in order to be free. Shutting out sense experience is not so difficult. Even when the gates of the senses have been shut, the mind continued to disturb and distract. It was the root of the ego principle and therefore the chief cause of the jiva's isolation from the universal Lord. How was this restless dragon to be conquered? Babaji maintained that the chief remedy lay in meditation on the form of the true master and absorption in Shabd. You ask me how to hold your mind. It is held only through Shabd. Hear its music daily and meditate on the form of Satguru. Then the mind shall cease to wander, and one day, born on the Shabd dune, the soul shall reach Dasanwar, the third inner plane and home of the universal mind. Thus, leaving the mental apparatus behind, the soul shall unite with the pure Shabd and through the grace of the Satguru reach Satkan. Have no doubt, it shall reach there. Once the mind had been brought under control and it no longer doubted and wavered, then the radiant form of the Master appears within. There is no difference between it and the physical form. It is like a reflection in a clear mirror. So long as the glass is not clear, nothing can be reflected. The mind is indeed a glass, which, when sullied by the muck flow of worldly attachments, blurred and hid everything. But the moment this film is cleansed, it images the universal in itself. The Surat, collected by Simran at the Tizrit Hill, shot through it with the aid of the magnetism of Shabd. As it centered the inner realms, it was met by the radiant form of the Master that welcomed it and thenceforward guided every step of its inner journey. Once the soul had won access to the Master in his radiant form within, its major task was over. The rest was a matter of time. It could, of course, be taken directly to higher planes by the Satguru, but he worked out the progress gradually, for else, as was the case with an insistent pundit, the shock and strain of it would be too great. The Sanchit karmas, actions of past lives to fructify in future births, and the Kriyaman karmas, actions in this life also to fructify in future lives, had of course been rendered ineffective the moment the Master had accepted one in his fold. But the Prabdha karmas, on which the present life was based, has to be worked out, else death would immediately ensue. The Master sought to exhaust these as swiftly and as smoothly as possible. When Baba Sawan Singh Ji's leg was fractured, Babaji revealed that it was the result of no mere accident, but of past karmas, whose fruit could not be avoided, but his suffering, if not wholly cancelled, had been mitigated through his Satguru's intercession. Whatever suffering has come to you, Babaji wrote, is only a fifth part. Four parts have been condoned, and went on to add, suffering and troubles are blessings in disguise, for they are ordained by the Lord. If our benefit lies in pain, he sends pain. If in pleasure, he sends pleasure. Pleasures and pains are tests of our strength, and if one does not waver or deflect, then the Almighty blesses such souls with Nam. Whatever troubles befell his disciples, Babaji told them to be of good cheer. The sooner their accounts were cleared, the better. And special grace was theirs in the hour of a trial. Sickness and pleasures are the fruits of past actions. all those who are sick are extended special grace. Let them, therefore, have no worry, but bear it with equanimity. During suffering, the mind wanders not and turns to Bhajan readily in sorrow. So blessed are the periods of sickness when the mind is turned toward Bhajan. This is a special gift to the satsangis. So whenever sickness and pain afflict you, accept them as the Lord's will and devote yourself to your spiritual exercises. So long as the sarat is absorbed in the shabdun, pain will not be felt. Has it not been said, pleasure is the disease and pain the remedy? Once one meets a competent Satguru, one learns the complete inner way and launches on a spiritual journey. Babaji would say, there is then only the liquidation of give and take that limits its flight. The soul is then not pure enough to catch the divine shabd and must be first freed of all karmic reactions. The Satguru must free it from the chain of karmas in this life itself, so as to safeguard against the necessity of taking further births for their repayment. Hence the inevitability of suffering. But fortunately for satsangis, years of pain are liquidated in a matter of days. The shabdun was one's guiding angel, one's protecting charm. If one took refuge in its richness, one's karma were steadily burnt away in its purifying flame. As the mind grew calmer and karmas got exhausted, the soul was progressively released from Maya and guided by the radiant master within, penetrating to ever higher inner planes. The disciple had not to worry. His task was only to abide by his guru's commandments and labor according to his will. It was for the Satguru to crown his efforts as he considered fit and appropriate, for he's the best judge and does what's best for the disciple. What the Lord considers best, he is doing. Do not bring yourself into the picture. Live by the words of the Master and continue performing your earthly duties. When the fruit is ripe, it will fall of its own accord without injury to itself or the bearing branch, and the ripe fruit is held in great value. But if we pluck the unripe fruit forcibly from off the tree, the branch is injured, and the raw fruit shrivels and is of little use. Meeting a competent master is the fulfillment of human birth. This is the fruit of life. To live by his commandments ensures its proper nurture. Daily, Simran and Bhajan to the maximum possible are its best food and nourishment. Emergence with the shabd is its ripening and falling off. Such is the progress of the soul. Its ripening is a matter of steady growth. Supported by the words of the Master, nourished by Bhajan, and born on the Shabdun, it transcended realm after realm until it leaves all coverings of mind and matter behind and reached Sat Khan. This is its true abode, the realm of pure spirit. From there, merging into the divine, it recedes progressively into the formless. Until passing through the Alak and Agam, it reaches the Anami, the nameless and formless source of all that moves and has its being. With some, as in the case of Babaji himself, the entire journey, owing to the spiritual proficiency they had gained in past lives, was accomplished at what seemed to their fellows a phenomenal and amazing speed. There were others who, through intense devotion and meditation, reaped in a single life the fruits of many births. But the overwhelming majority consisted of those who took to spirituality as a passing phase of idealism and who did not make Shab the sheet anchor of their lives, but turned to it only intermittently. For such people, success in a single life was not assured, but the seed once sown by a master would not go to waste, and that which had not sprouted in one birth could blossom forth in the next under the guidance of the living human manifestation of the Shab power working at that time. And even this is unnecessary if one had already, before death, contacted the Nam current and washed away all earthly desires. For then one could work out the rest of one's salvation from supraphysical planes. Once a true Satguru has taken one in his fold, one is assured of deliverance and sooner or later will reach one's eternal home. Even if he left his earthly frame, his guidance and protection continues unaffected. There's no need for those who had been initiated by him to seek initiation from any other, for if the Guru's physical form was mortal, his Shabd form is eternal and ever reverberating. One could, of course, seek elucidation on knotty points from a fellow disciple who had been chosen by one's master to succeed him, but as for inner guidance, that continued to remain the sole responsibility of one's preceptor, even if he was physically alive no longer. The disciple's sole duty is to follow the practices enjoined by his guru, and it is for him to crown them with success. Had not Jesus said, "Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world"? And did not Swamiji, on the last day of his mission on earth, assure his devotees, "Have no fear whatsoever. I am forever with each one of you, and your protection and care shall be even greater than before"? If anyone is initiated by a perfect Satguru, having love and faith in him, serving him devotedly, and before he has advanced far, the guru should depart. He should continue to contemplate his form and perform all the exercises prescribed by the guru. The same Satguru in the radiant form will continue to carry on the work as he had commenced it and will carry it on to final success as if he were still in the body. Since there's a little time left, I was going to read the very last part of the Master's talk, "The Ocean of Intoxication." Master said, "Our Master used to tell a story in which some sculptors or portrait painters who were foreigners, came to China to show their skills. The king agreed to give them a hall in which to do whatever painting they liked. Some Chinese painters also wanted to have an opportunity to show their skills. The king said, 'All right, divide the hall by a curtain.' It was a big hall. One wall was given to the foreigners, and the other to their own countrymen. They began to work on the walls. After some time, the painting was ready. The foreigners went to the king and told him, 'Our painting is ready. Would you kindly come and visit it?' The king went there and saw that the painting was very beautiful. He was amazed at how lovely it was. As he was coming out, the Chinese painters also said, Would you kindly have a look at ours? All right. When the curtain was taken off, to the amazement of the king, the very same painting was on the other wall and was also on this one. It was exactly there and still clearer than the other one, because in the original one, done by hand, little imperfect spots did show up here and there. But in the reflection, they were not there. He was amazed and said, "What have you been doing? When two men are in competition, they won't let others see what they are doing. What did you do?" "We have done nothing, sir," they answered. "We have done no labor. We were simply rubbing the wall so much from day to day that it now reflects. That's all we have done." So it is the love that reflects. That's the rubbing that reflects the master within you, which is I, not now I, but the Christ in me. That is devotion. There we are wanting. We may have love, I tell you honestly. Love knows no burdens. Love beautifies everything. And love and all things shall be added unto you. But devotion is still greater, and surrender greater still. That love is love, where there is devotion and surrender. Where there is no devotion and surrender, there is no love. By devotion and surrender, you lose your ego. You reflect the same as he is in you. You become he himself without any effort. That is the highest of all. There's a stillness in the room. The master becomes very calm and quiet. He and Taiji are speaking in Hindi about a poem written by master to his master Sawan Singh that Taiji is going to sing. Master says, "We are here to be mad now. I think we are talking about madness." Taiji sings a line, "Out of the madness of love, we will see you. The one whom I love will come." Master says, "It so happened once that I went to Amritsar, and Master was expected to arrive there. We were all sitting in expectation of his arrival, and the message came that Master was not coming. All were disheartened. Some people dispersed, but I remained there. It was also a madness, I would say. I wrote this poem. He will come. I will see him with my own eyes. I was writing this and going around in madness, and after about an hour, Master came there. So great is the strong attraction of love. This is a poem written at that time." Taiji sings, "Out of the madness of love, we will see you." Master interjects, "He must come." Taiji sings, "Out of the madness of love, we will see you. The one whom I love will come. He must come. We will see my loved one. Out of the madness of love, we will see you. The one whom I love will come. Out of the madness of love, we will see you. Oh, Master Sawan, we must see you. Oh, Perfect One, we will see you. Out of the madness of love, we will see you. The one whom I love will come." Master says, "It so happened that he came after that." So, love is a very great power, like a glass that does not show your face unless you put something behind it. Similarly, the love polish at the back reflects the master within, the God within you. Taiji sings again, out of the madness of love, we will see you, O Master Sawan. We must see you, O Perfect One. We will see you. Taiji finds it difficult to continue and stops. There is a short silence. Master said, when the clouds come, the rain falls. It is the forerunner of God's coming. When there is such a pining that nothing else remains between you and the beloved, the Master. Once, while sitting in the satsang, Rai Saligram came into that state of madness. The whole satsang began to feel that same madness. One day, we were celebrating the death anniversary of Hazur, and it so happened that the whole satsang began to cry. So, love is everything. Love is devotion, and surrender is the most ideal. But love begins with, if you love me, keep my commandments, as Christ said. That does not cost you anything. You won't be a loser, I assure you. In a short time, you will gain what you could not gain in a lifetime, because you will reflect the whole thing, like the painters who came for this. All right, God bless you. That ends today's satsang. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Helen, for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a minute, I'll do a count. So today we had 67 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this satsang for us. Now please hang up your phone.